Welcome to the Redefining Freedom podcast. We're going to talk today about two really big things. First, the election of 2023. Wow. And tonight's Republican primary debate for President of the United States of America. Let's talk about it. Hey, hey, everybody. This is your host, Sophia Nelson. Today is November the 8th. 2023, and wow, what a night. What a night here in the Commonwealth of Virginia where I live and across the country. I want to talk about two things, and I want to be very focused about those. As we talk about this notion of redefining freedom, last night's election could not have been clearer, in my humble opinion, particularly here in the Commonwealth, where abortion rights were on the ballot, whether you voted for them or not and saw it on your ballot when you went into the booth. Of course not, it wasn't there. The word abortion rights was not on the ballot, but boy, was it there. It was a ghost. It was the essence of what moved voters in the Commonwealth. It's clear when you look at the data that, particularly in the Northern Virginia suburbs where I live, which is heavy for government workers, probably worried about a shutdown in the next couple of weeks, and you have a more college-educated, more diverse, more center-left-leaning population. Even at the school board level, Governor Youngkin really took a beating here in Loudoun County, where he really built his political career on the parental rights movement and solidifying some of his policies and proposals in the secondary and post-secondary educational levels here in the Commonwealth. And Democrats won a majority on the school board as well. So I want to dig into this a little bit, but again, I want to talk about this concept of redefining freedom, because what we see happening post the Dobbs decision of the United States Supreme Court this past summer, what you see is that the country, I think, was shocked and awed by the Supreme Court doing this. I mean, it is very rare, I've said this before on this podcast, that the Supreme Court overturns itself. It's only really ever done so in what I call the slavery, civil rights, reconstruction type cases, where the country, of course, starts half slave and half free. And it's not till the 13th and 14th and 15th Amendments that slavery is abolished. And there's the Equal Protection Clause, the 14th, and there's black men get the right to vote with the 15th Amendment. Folks, this is back in Lincoln's day. Then you go through the Reconstruction era, the civil rights laws, 42 U.S.C. 81, 83. Those are the Civil Rights Act of 1871, et cetera. And so you've got a Supreme Court with Dred Scott and Plessy versus Ferguson and Brown versus the Board of Education that really has only overturned and reversed stare decisis, meaning let the decision stand or precedent, in matters of race. Because, of course, of the way the country evolved into living up to, as Dr. King said, that promissory note that entitled all of her citizens, all of America's citizens, to freedom, to equality, to liberty. That having been said, when I talk about redefining freedom, what I'm saying is that we are going to, in just 2.5 years, celebrate 250 years as a nation since the Declaration of Independence, okay, in 2026. And if you look at where we are now, in less than a decade, minorities, racial minorities, will be the majority. The country's demographics are changing rapidly. The Republican Party, I've been talking about this for 20 years. Google the pieces that I wrote in the Wall Street Journal, in the New York Times, in the Washington Post, in USA Today. I've been talking about this forever, that there was going to be this reckoning that was going to come on racial diversity and demographics. And if the Republican Party didn't figure this out way back when George Herbert Walker Bush was president in 1988, they were going to end up right here. And what you have now is a tribalized, very white, very Caucasian, very rural, some outer burbs, if you will, reactionary party that doesn't understand the landscape of Gen Y and Z, that doesn't understand millennials. I'm a Gen Xer. I'm in my 50s. You know, the baby boomers are now well into their 70s and into their 80s. You know, you've got the sandwich generation between Xers and boomers that are in their 60s, and all of us kind of grew up with a very different world. No technology other than our televisions and cassette players or 8-tracks, whatever you had. And then you have the generation that came up with technology, the generation that comes up post 9/11 and that has to deal with school shooting, something as a girl I never even imagined or thought about. We never had to do drills and worried about being shot in our classrooms to death. The world has shifted. The post George Floyd world of Black Lives Matter, the world now where we watched Israel be attacked in real time in a way that, unlike the 1967 war and other wars between the Israelis and the Palestinians, etc., and other Arab nations, this one is live in real time. And watching what's happening on our college campuses, God knows I know that well. Another podcast for another day. But the point is that we're shifting and our freedoms are being redefined because our population is being redefined. Our values and goals have been redefined, whether we like it or not. This is not your grandfather's or your great-grandfather's America. It's a different America. And I think the trick is going to be how we hold fast to our core values, as Thomas Jefferson penned in that Declaration of Independence, those values of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and how we always keep those as our North Stars, our shining light, and then how we pull ourselves back and realize that we are still being governed in the year 2023, in the 21st century, by an 18th century document. Think about that. I love the Constitution. Wrote a whole book about it. I think it is one of the most amazing documents ever written. Stood in James Madison's room where a lot of the Constitution was drafted, at his home in Montpelier in Virginia here. And I've been to Monticello so many times, I can't count. But the reality is we're not that nation anymore. Thank God. We are always perfecting and moving forward. And last night, I think, gives us a number of instructive things, particularly as someone who was a lifelong Republican. And ever since Donald Trump became a Republican, I can't and will not be one. That man is reckless. That man is unhinged. That man is immoral. That man is godless. That man is rudderless. That man is dangerous. He's a racist, overtly. He's a sexist in a way that I've rarely seen men be so overt about, even for someone of his generation. And he's been indicted on 91 felony counts, you know, 4 different indictments. He's a criminal. He's on trial right now for tax fraud, his kids. I mean, America, I don't know what you see in this person, but for those of you that are still holding fast to a man like this, you don't get it. And you don't understand what I say when I'm talking about redefining freedom and where this country is moving. For those of you who believe that you can send threat letters, somewhat 20 attorney generals, all Republican, sending threat letters to corporation heads and to universities and to law firms saying, post the Supreme Court striking down affirmative action in education. They've just been on a real winning streak, that court has, from striking down abortion to affirmative action. This is regressive politics. And I'm a center-right conservative, but I'm smart enough to know that's not where we're headed. Those things don't resonate. And if you think that you're going to threaten and frighten corporate America into not having diversity, equity, and inclusion, if you think the universities are going to stop doing what they do, you're just mistaken. You're tuned out. Everything has shifted. So the question becomes, I think, in light of these 2023 elections, as we go into 2024, the question becomes, how do we keep that North Star, that shining city on the hill, those values and virtues that makes us the envy of the world? And how do we engage our diversity? Because the real trick about republics and why they don't last long is because it is so much easier to be Sweden or to be Norway or to be Germany or be any of these other countries where, or a Muslim country where, you know, your people are homogeneous. 90% of the people worship the same way, look the same way, marry the same way, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Versus America, which is this great melting pot of Christians, of Jews, of Muslims, of atheists, of people who don't believe in God, of straight people and gay people and black people and Asian people and Hispanic peoples. And it is not easy to hold together a nation when you have that kind of diversity. Yet we've done it successfully for almost 250 years, but we are at a turning point. We are at a point where we are looking at the abyss, and we're going to have to figure out if something's looking back or if we're going to have to go and turn in a different direction, because we are truly on the edge of this small, whether it's on the far right or the far left, because folks, the far left has got as many problems as the far right. They're just not as stupid and as open with it and as arrogant with it. They're a little slicker about it. But you've seen that with Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, who was censured, by the way, yesterday by the Congress. 22 Democrats joined with Republicans to censure her for her, what I believe were reckless and incendiary comments about Israel. I have no problem with her being a Palestinian and supporting her people and wanting children to be safe and women to be safe and the elderly to be safe. I agree with that 1,000%. What I have a problem with is when you try to be slick and take from the river to the sea, which we all know is a cry to kill Jews and always has been, and you try to pretend it's not. Like, that's not okay. I mean, if you're going to be a woman or man, say what you need to say and stand by it, but don't be slick. And I think that we're just seeing this upending of American democracy as we know it. So let's talk about Virginia, my home state. Governor Youngkin got beat down last night. There's no other way to put it. I can't make it pretty for him. He overestimated his popularity. He believed his own polls. He believed his own press releases. He thought that his popularity in the state could translate into him telling women in the Commonwealth, that, well, you know, Roe's been overturned now. Virginia's the last state in the entire South that actually has reproductive freedom rights. And we're going to let you keep them to a certain point, but we're going to limit them. And we're going to compromise on your health, your decisions, your freedoms, and, you know, let you have a 15-week ban or a 15-week limit, if you will, right? Never use the word ban. I knew that was bad. Any of us that live here in these Northern Virginia suburbs, again, very wealthy, you know, federal governments here, people are young families or middle-aged people like myself who are, you know, their children are grown, nieces and nephews out, et cetera. And, you know, they're looking towards the next 10 years or so of retirement. And, you know, they don't want the drama. They're not into the culture wars. And the very thing that got Glenn Youngkin elected in 2021, and let's not forget that Terry McAuliffe was a really bad candidate for the Democrats. He was tone deaf. He didn't see the education issue. He didn't see the parental rights issue, and he didn't get it. And that's why he lost. Glenn Youngkin seized on it. He was smart. He kept it local. Glenn Youngkin tried to nationalize Virginia and give Republicans this roadmap to deal with Roe being reversed and having the policy go back to the states. And it backfired badly. Not only did Democrats keep the state Senate, and it looks like they might have picked up maybe one or two seats. It depends. A couple of races still haven't been called, but they definitely are going to hold the majority. And in the House, it flipped. The Democrats got 51. They might end up with 53. Glenn Youngkin got destroyed last night in Virginia, and his presidential aspirations went right up in flames with him. He's got 2 years left. He's a lame duck. He's got to work with Democrats. They're not going to let very much of his agenda get through because everybody's going to focus now on 2025. And to our Attorney General, Jason Mayores, who I know wants to run, he's a Republican, and Winsome Sears, who I know wants to run as Lieutenant Governor, you guys are going to have your work cut out for you, because what do you run on now? How do you rethink and rebuild and redefine the coalition of Republicanism in this state? If MAGA is what these folks continue to embrace, and Donald Trump, I just can't imagine he's going to get beat in the Republican primary. We're going to talk about that in a moment. But let's assume Trump is the Republican nominee in 2024. They're losing down ballot elections. Kentucky, Andy Beshear's in a overwhelmingly ruby red state. got reelected by about 5-6 percentage points. He won the first time by less than a half a percentage point. Daniel Cameron had a lot of baggage, but African-American, white wife in Kentucky, I'm going to just call thing a thing, Republican, you did not protect the rights of Breonna Taylor, a young black woman who was murdered in her bed by police who came into the wrong house. And you thought that was funny and you thought you could outrun it. And he got beat down badly in a state where other Republicans down ballot won. Republicans had a terrible night last night. Ohio, which has, you know, a pretty Republican bent, Republican governor elected J.D. Vance last time around. It'll be interesting to see if Sherrod Brown survives in 24. But, you know, if you look at the politics of this, Ohio voted to enshrine reproductive freedom rights in their constitution. Republicans blew this. They didn't read the tea leaves right. The Dobbs decision was a disaster for them. And it will continue to be in 2024 if they don't figure out a way to pivot. But to Mayorkas and Winsome Sears, good luck, because the Democrats have coalitions. They're expanding their voting base, whereas yours is retracting. Voters of color do not want to support these type of culture war politics. And at the end of the day, Virginia is, what, 23-24% black, particularly in the Hampton Roads, Richmond area, and less so in Northern Virginia, but all kind of other diverse groups of color. It's a changing state. It's definitely a light purple state, maybe a little blue. It's winnable for moderate center-right Republicans like George Allen, like, you know, longtime Senator John Warner, and others who've been successful here because they understood the demographics of this state. And they've changed dramatically in the 30 years I've been in Virginia. More than 30 years, but yes. And so, you know, and I've said this openly, I had absolutely planned to put my name on a ballot in 2024 and run for the U.S. Senate in Virginia. I had been planning it for a long time. A lot of support. I think I would have done well raising money. I've got an open congressional seat right in my backyard in Virginia 10. But I will not put my name on a ballot as a Republican right now, because when I look at who's running the party, who's running the state and the messaging, and I look at Donald Trump being at the top of my ticket, even though everybody knows I don't like him, have nothing to do with them, never supported them, Republicans are going to struggle down ballot, no matter if they're dynamic. And Youngkin is all of those things, by the way. Youngkin is the guy who, had he pulled this off, he would have given Republicans a way forward. But he misread the tea leaves. And like I said, he thought he was more popular than he is. And he forgot that this was the first time he put himself on the ballot again. Post a lot of the policies that he's had, voting rights, you know, rescinding people's rights, etc. He just didn't read the tea leaves right. He took a gamble and he lost. So his presidential hopes are over for 24. I suspect that Youngkin's play will be to try to finish these next 2 years strong. And he will look at Mark Warner's Senate seat in 2026, because that's pretty much the last play he's got. But I don't know how well that's going to work for him, depending on what happens in the 2025 state elections. And I think the Democrats are going to be in a strong place to win the governor's house in 2025. And how does that bode for Youngkin when basically he'll be blamed for losing the gains that they made in 2021 and having a wipeout? I may put my name on the ballot in 26. I don't know. I'll make that decision later. But I am thinking about it, because I believe that the Republican Party is going to get their clock cleaned in 2024 and get wiped out. And I think it's needed. I think there needs to be a clearing, a cleansing of Trump. And until Donald Trump is gone from the Republican Party, it will continue to look like this and be like this and lose elections, period. So let's talk about the Republican debate tonight in Miami, Florida, Ruby Red, Florida, DeSantis territory. And it seems to me that you have five candidates who made the cut from the original, what was it, nine or so that started. Nikki Haley continues to be the best candidate the Republicans have to win a general election. I'm going to say that again. But I do not think the Republican Party nominates her because Donald Trump is still leading by a long shot in the polls, and he's not even showing up to the debates, which is disrespectful. It's stunning. I've never seen a candidate running for president just decide they're skipping the debates. If he's the nominee, I fully expect him not to show up at the debates with Joe Biden. But I think that in light of some of these polls we've seen saying, you know, Biden's dead man walking, no pun intended there, no disrespect to the president, I just think the election results keep showing something else. So I think the pundit class in Washington, the same pundit class that said Trump could never win and that Hillary would be president, and the same pundit class that said a black man would never be elected president and yada, 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 you just keep getting it wrong. You keep getting this wrong, guys. You need to shut up and you need to just pay attention and listen to the people and get out there and actually talk to people and get out of Washington. That's what I find really teaches me a lot. So, you know, I think the Republican debate tonight, they have to go after Trump. They have to begin to chop down his lead, and they have to begin to cull down that field from 5 to 2. The top two people, which is, again, Nikki Haley and probably at this point, you know, Chris Christie's a good, he's kind of like Elmer Fudd with the shotgun, you know, going after Bugs Bunny, right? It's a losing battle, but at least he's doing it. But I think Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis are probably the last two standing. They're probably the two most serious contenders the GOP has. And both of them are young, you know, in their 50s. DeSantis might even be in his late 40s. Nikki Haley's early 50s. Governors, red states. Nikki Haley has foreign policy experience, whereas DeSantis does not. And I think that she's tough and she's good and she's really managed to navigate that abortion issue smartly, the way I'm talking about, which is, yes, it's an issue, but let's talk about the things we can agree on and let's work from there. And no, there's not going to be a federal ban. And no, we're not doing these things because you can't get 60 votes in the Senate. Like, she's got common sense. She's sharp. She's smart. She's a good debater. She's tough. But they have got to go after Donald Trump tonight or they're not serious. Because if all you're going to do is get on the stage and say, I'll support Trump if he's the nominee, and oh, I'm not going to offend his MAGA base. Have you idiots not looked? MAGA is losing elections everywhere they go in this country. Get a grip. Find your courage. Stop being a spineless coward and talk about your vision for America and why you believe you're better than Donald Trump, which should not be hard, folks. All right, now that I've ranted on that, CNN will have coverage tonight. I won't be on air, but I will be on our instant analysis team on our CNN.com, CNN Opinion. And I'll also be talking about, my editors asked me to opine a little bit on the Virginia election as well. Which I just did. But again, I think Governor Youngkin, his best shot at a comeback is 2026 for the Senate. But I simply don't know what he has to offer, because if he's been rejected this resoundingly, and don't forget, Governor Youngkin made this election about him. He was in the ads. He was front and center. He was the face of the Republican Party because he believed his poll numbers and he thought it would translate. And he flamed out. Big problem for Republicans here in the state going into 25 and 26 and beyond. So listen, I am looking forward to the debate tonight. We'll come back and do another analysis over the weekend as we get a clearer picture on what happens in Virginia, how much of a margin the Democrats end up with in the House and the Senate. But they have taken both, so that's done. And, you know, we'll kind of do a post-mortem, more of a deep dive. But I wanted to check in today and just simply say that, listen, as we redefine freedom, and what I mean by that, again, is, you know, for diversity. Diversity is a good thing. Every data indices that business has, business models that we look at tell us all the time is that diversity is good for companies. It's good for the bottom line. It's good for people. It's good for business development. It's just good. But this issue of inclusion and equity is one we have to wrestle with. It's the same on our college campuses. Some people have speech, other people don't. If you say something, you're run off. If the protected group says something, they're coddled and covered. That's not America. That's not freedom. Freedom is either Freedom is either for all of us, folks. Freedom is either for all of us, folks. Freedom is either for all of us, folks, or it's for none of us. Period. Full stop. To those of you who are stuck in some tribal, crazy cult war and think that you're going to take America back to 1823 or 1863 or 1903 or 1923, you're just mistaken. You're missing the message here. And Gen Y and Z showed up at the polls yesterday, particularly in the Commonwealth, long lines at William & Mary and other colleges here. And it showed up in the voting. Young women not going backwards. Again, the Republicans kind of missed the mark on this one. So it's going to be interesting to see what the pivot is. People like Liz Cheney, myself, others, I think you'll see a lot of us trying to figure out how we rebuild the party, but it will not be rebuilt. It will not be a mainstream, open tent party until Donald Trump is gone and all of his MAGAs with him, period. Conservatives need to make a comeback. Conservatives are people who believe in a strong national defense. They're hawks on the military. They are strong on foreign policy in support of our allies in NATO and Ukraine and Israel. They believe in a conservative agenda, which means less government, hands off of our bodies, off of our property, off of our money, off of our beliefs. That's the conservatism I grew up with, fiscally conservative. Yes, you balance the budget. Yes, we never should have got off the gold standard, but I'm a Jack Kemp girl, so, you know, I'm a little old school on that. But there was some wisdom to that. This issue with the IRS, there needs to be a total overhaul of the tax structure, of the tax code. We need to get down to governing and doing some serious things here that we haven't been willing to do. Washington is just a big culture war. I don't like you. You don't like me. I'm going to get you. I'm going to shut down the government if you piss me off. I'm going to do this. You do that. That's not governing, and that's not freedom. Time for us to pivot and to move in a different direction, Republicans. You're going to have to shape it up. You're going to have to change. You're going to have to take a long, hard look at where you are, because otherwise the Republican Party is flirting with being really extinct in a decade. So let's talk about it. Looking at polls right now in real time, Nikki Haley has a 6-point-plus lead over Biden. Trump is +4. DeSantis is +2. Again, do I believe these polls? I do not, because what the polls are telling me and what I'm seeing that happened yesterday are two very different things. Joe Biden has been underestimated his whole life. I'll end with this. I like President Biden. I met him in 1988 when I was an intern in the United States Senate. If you'd have told me when I was in my 50s and he was 80 that he'd be president, I would have laughed at you. But that's the kind of guy Joe Biden is. Underestimated, has dealt with tragedy and loss on a level that most people never could survive. He's a good man. He's an honorable man. I think he's done an amazing job navigating the situation with Israel and Gaza and Ukraine. And he's a steady hand. Yeah, he's old. Yeah, his gait is a little slower. Yeah, he stumbles and stammers sometimes. Have you looked at Trump lately, folks? 3 years younger, grossly obese and overweight, rages, is angry, is incoherent, doesn't know what year it is, doesn't know that World War II was in the 40s, not now. Are you kidding me? Accused credibly of sexual assault, found liable by a jury of his peers in New York, had to pay E. Jean Carroll $4-5 million. And a judge said, yes, it was rape. That's what you want for president, the guy who sold secrets to our enemies? We don't even know the extent of that damage. I mean, I'm really struggling with this. I don't know who these people are that like this man. And why is the bigger question? Because Biden's old? So was Moses. And he got the job done. You know what I mean? So anyway, listen, you guys have an amazing day. We'll be back. Make sure you follow us at CNN.com and our commentary tonight, and we'll go from there. Have a good one.